Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 304. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always, Guillaume Viette.
I am psyched to be here.
James Jones.
I am James Jones.
And returning champion, John Lindemann.
I am also James Jones.
I saw that one coming.
I'm using that as an adjective, though.
Oh.
John, it's so good to have you back, buddy.
It's good to be back, Johnny.
So we're gonna hear everything John's been playing while he was gone, and we've got a lot of other games to talk about. We got your listener mail coming up later in the show, and at the very end, we're also going to announce the next retroactive round already. Just because we took so long doing Wario Land 4, I wanted to kind of jump into the next one pretty quickly. So we're going to have that all coming up later, but first it's new business. And John, why don't you tell us what's been keeping you business? That doesn't even make sense.
All right. Well, I did manage to pick up Rhythm Heaven Fever for a grand total of $5 from Best Buy.
What?
Holy shit. Yeah. What?
That's $5. It was on sale for $5.
Yep. Where?
So Best Buy. If you could find one in stock, it was $5. Yeah, they just wanted to clean it out, obviously. So I went over there, and when the store opened, they had the one near me had one copy left, so I grabbed it. $5. Haven't really played too much of it, but it's pretty much what I expect. But yeah, could not turn it down for that price.
No.
So I tried playing Rhythm Heaven Fever recently. I had tried playing it since like the spring when I first picked it up. I had the damnedest time trying to get it to work, and finally figured out it's because I have a new sound bar in my living room, and whatever the latency is that sound bar introduces, it's too much for the game. And I tried calibrating it, and the calibration was so far off that it would like actually flip into the next note, so the game couldn't even figure out what the hell I was doing when I tried to calibrate it.
Wow.
So I'm going to have to
like disconnect my sound system when I want to play that game.
But yeah, so I have not played too much of it, just kind of scratched the surface of that one because I also got Muramasa. And that was I got that on Amazon for like $10 or something like that. $10-$12. Could not turn it down. I've actually seen it go that low before, but I decided to finally bite on it. So and I'm liking it so far. I can't say that I've actually played another game like it. The whole sort of hand-painted backgrounds kind of thing, and just its whole, just the way it looks and, the way it plays is very, very unique. So I'm enjoying it. I haven't really gotten too much into the whole kind of character optimizing stuff that they have in there. I think I've only gotten a couple of the newer swords. I'm enjoying it so far. I expect it to control a lot tighter than it does. It's a little bit floaty, and sometimes it's kind of disorienting when I'm trying to find my way around the screen.
There. So, John, it's been a few years since I played Muramasa, and I'm curious, in 2012, as a Wii game, do you still think it looks really good?
Yeah, well, the thing is, its art style is so unique that I don't think it's really... you can't really compare it to a lot of things, so it still looks good. I still think, just because of the... you really don't see too many games with the kind of hand-drawn stuff that artwork that it has. I think it still looks good, even after all this time. I think it's, the one thing about it is the fact that it's one of those games that really won't age that poorly because it looks so different.
Yeah, I really think the only concern on its visuals or potentials for Jackie's on TVs, if we ever pass beyond the current resolution of TVs, that next set.
Yeah, now I am playing it on a 4:3. I'll say that. So.
Oh, I actually think the widescreen does wonders for that game.
Hmm.
But I can see the upscaling being an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind playing it on a widescreen. That's a good point. Let's see. Other stuff I've been doing. I've been traveling a lot, so I always bring my PSP and my 3DS with me everywhere I go, but the 3DS, because Nintendo insists on really not releasing many games that I'm interested in until probably next year. I'm still stuck with Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7, And, you know, Mario Kart 7, that one's just kind of one of those games that I always, you know, it'll be kind of always in the background. At some point, I'll always pick it up and play. Super Mario 3D Land, I beat that. I still have yet to go through the second half of it, the second leg, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's half the game.
Yeah, so. It is literally half the game, but, you know, I beat the main story. I just haven't had the urge to go back through it, but I will at some point.
Once you get started, you'll keep going.
Yeah, yeah. So the PSP is kind of my go-to, you know, on-the-road platform right now, so... And also the fact that, you know, everybody's trying to clear out their PSP stock so you can get every single game for $10, pretty much. So there's a couple of PSP games, not a lot of them, but there's a couple of them that I always wanted to pick up. I picked up God of War: Ghost of Sparta. I haven't even touched that though, because I've been playing Gran Turismo PSP, which is a game that I always wanted because, you know, and this goes back to my Hall of Shame. The PS3 Gran Turismo has been in my Hall of Shame for quite a while. And
so you went and bought another one.
Well, no. See, this is a thing. It's kind of a the PSP, this should inspire you, James, because the PSP game has actually sparked me to go back and play more of the PS3 game. And
so you mean any of the PS3 game, then?
Exactly. My PS3 save file was absolutely pathetic. I'd probably played the game for about maybe an hour or two, probably. And this was like,
you know,
this was like 2 years ago, literally.
You realize there are people who log thousands of hours in that game, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the time that I had actually put into that game was completely pitiful. So I started playing, you know, Gran Turismo PSP, and the thing I like about it is the fact that it's very well. One of the things that it was originally bashed for when it came out was the fact that it doesn't really have, like, in Gran Turismo PS3, you have your career mode, for lack of a better term, and they don't have that in the PSP version of it. So really, all it is just kind of a way to collect cars, and then you can import them into the PS3 version of the game. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Connectivity.
You can import them. Yeah, you can import up to 50 of them into the PS3 version of the game. Now, the models look crappy, but the thing is, what's interesting about the PSP one versus the PS3 one is that the PSP one is a lot easier. Like, the challenges are actually sane. Like, you can typically, you know, you can pull off a gold in most of them, you know, with a little bit of work, you know. It's actually a nice learning curve on most of them, but the PS3 one, it's just, most of those challenges are just a bitch. So right out of the gate, you're kind of like up against the wall. Like, it's pretty hard to kind of start making progress. It feels like you're not making any progress with Gran Turismo 5 most of the time. That's probably the hardest thing. It's probably my biggest gripe about the game is that, you know, it's supposed to kind of like teach you how to really, you know, drive a car, and it's supposed to be so accurate and stuff, but really it's just a pain in the ass. So I don't know. Like, I like it. I like it. I really like Gran Turismo PSP a lot. But it really is just more of a companion piece. It makes more sense playing it after playing Gran Turismo 5 than it does the other way around. So I can see how people would have played it first and been like, wow, there's not a heck of a lot of game here, because really the main thrust of the game is to, you know, go through all the challenges, you know, unlock a bunch of points, buy a bunch of cars, and then import them into Gran Turismo 5. So
yeah. Well, if you're ready to move on, John, I wanted to ask one other thing.
Sure.
So earlier you mentioned that Nintendo's not really releasing anything that interests you on 3DS this year. And I mean, the two games that you have came out last year, holiday season.
Yep.
You didn't get them until later, but I'm just curious, what are you looking for? I mean, I'm not going to say Nintendo's 3DS lineup in 2012 has been stellar. I don't think it has been. And if you're not interested in New Super Mario Bros. 2, then it's been a wasteland for a while, and it will be again for a while. You know, and a lot of the, you know, good stuff like Luigi's Mansion got delayed, but
right.
I'm just kind of curious, what is it that you're actually looking for, and have you checked out the eShop? Because there's some pretty good stuff on the eShop that has really helped fill in the gaps a lot.
Well, that's the thing. I'm probably this year, I'll buy Epic Mickey, because that looks really
okay.
Good.
Okay.
And then, you know, next year, I mean, the title I was really looking forward to was Castlevania. So
yeah,
that's just not happening. In terms of the eShop, you know, I mean, there's stuff I could get there. You know, I could get stuff like Mutant Muds or VVVVVVV.
I think you would like both of those a lot.
You know, I could get those, but, you know, they're not high on my list. So,
yeah.
You know, they would be okay. There would be the kind of thing, if I didn't have anything else to play, I would probably pick them up, but, you know.
But VVVVVV was even on sale, so you didn't decide.
I missed that sale by a day.
Ah.
I saw it the day after it ended because I was actually planning to buy it, but where I was at the time, I didn't have access to Wi-Fi. And the next day, it was over, which really pissed me off because I would have bought it.
I wonder if they might do like a rotation and bring that back on sale at some point.
I really hope they do.
There's nothing on sale right now, though, is there?
No, nothing right now. Since the month of Mario ended.
Yeah.
There's nothing left.
The month of Mario.
Which makes me wonder if maybe at the Nintendo Direct or whatever, you know, maybe the September 13th event when they announce all the Wii U stuff, maybe they'll take that opportunity to announce something. Or maybe just during the holiday season when they make so much of their money anyway, they don't really see a need to do sales. And maybe they'll wait until January before they do another
I would say wait until people actually get their Christmas 3DSs in hand and then be like, hey, and shit's on sale!
Yeah. Yep. That would be smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be smart to do them all the time, in my opinion, but...
That's not Nintendo smart, though.
No, I guess not.
There's smart, and then there's Nintendo smart. So there are certainly things on the eShop that kind of I have on my list, but that's the thing. I was also, for the month of Mario, I was going to go through and buy all those Mario games, but I just kind of lost track of those guys. And it just seemed like I always... Like, I missed the game. I wanted to get all of them, and the only one I wound up getting was Super Mario Brothers. So, which is
really
that's fine. I have it about three other different forms, but
well, but John's not an ambassador, so he didn't already have it like the rest of us do.
Yeah, I mean, so and I don't
that's
mind fair. Having that on my 3DS.
Yeah, that's totally
it's an
fair.
Awesome. Yeah, it's an awesome go-to game for.
Yeah, like if I'm taking my 3DS home for Christmas, guess what game everybody's going to want to play on it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now,
Steel Diver. I thought the delay would make my reaction better.
Shit, I had an idea. Oh, the other thing I wanted to ask John is the Game Boy Virtual Console stuff. How much interest? I mean, did you ever have old black and white Game Boy? Are you interested in those games? Because there's some really good ones out by now.
No, because I remember I was the only person who had one here for a while in the old lineup.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I never had one. I never bought an old school Game Boy.
And see, I didn't either, and so I've been buying a lot of those because these are like games that I played on friends' systems when I was a kid, but I never got to play for more than 30 minutes, you know, whatever, just borrowing it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is a chance to go back and like discover all these games that I kind of coveted, you know, when I was a kid and I never had access to.
Yeah, I mean, for the month of Mario, I really wanted to get Super Mario Land, but I missed that one, and I actually did see Super Mario Land 2, but I was like... I want to play Super Mario Land before Super Mario Land 2, so... But,
Well, yeah, because otherwise you won't get the story.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
They're really completely different, but both good and worth playing, I think.
Yep.
It sounds like you need someone to send you an eShop card to indoctrinate you.
Yeah, I mean, they do send me their awesome emails, but I typically just kind of...
This is a great transition point, because speaking of emails from Nintendo, I got one a few weeks ago... inviting me to the Wii U experience coming through Denver, Colorado.
Oh!
And this is... Yeah, I haven't seen a schedule of, like, all the cities they're going to hit up. I don't know that they've really announced their tour schedule. Because I don't remember reading... I'd heard about it, but hadn't really heard any details on when it would be and what cities. And it seems, overall, it just seems kind of less coordinated than the whole Cube Club thing. Because I think... I mean, this was 11 years ago, but I think when they did the Cube Clubs, I want to say they kind of did them all in the same weekend, like all over the country or something like that. It didn't feel like it was a traveling road show. It felt like, you know, like a month before GameCube came out, they did these kind of parties in like 10 major cities, and it felt like they did them all around the same time, maybe over two weekends.
Yeah, they're around the same time.
Yeah, but then after that is when they kind of started doing the whole bus tour thing where they used to take the Team Nintendo crew and they would have these kind of like big, crazy, decked out buses that would go around with the latest Mario or Zelda or GBA game or whatever. And those were always kind of like smaller events and they were a little hard to keep up with because they're always moving around. So anyway, I got invited to the Wii U experience and, of course, having very good memories of Cube Club Atlanta with John Lindemann.
Yes.
So yeah, anyway, I went to the Wii U experience last Friday night, And there were probably, let's see, so I had a 2-hour time slot Friday night from 7 to 9 that I was allowed to be there. There were probably 75 people in there, maybe 100, but I think probably less than that. So it was fairly crowded for the space that they had, but they had a lot of demos. It was all E3 demos, which is kind of what I expected.
Sure.
So it was all the same stuff, but there were so many Wii U demos at E3 this year that I didn't get to play all of them. So I got to play a few things that I didn't get to before, and that was sort of my primary mission going in there. I also knew that I wanted to play more Super Mario Bros. U because I had just gotten 2, of course, for 3DS, and I kind of wanted to compare them side by side. I definitely prefer the Wii U game. Definitely. It's just, it's more fun. It just feels better. It looks way better. And, you know, of course they had it set up as a 4-player mode, and it just, you know, sort of reminds me of what's fun about 4-player New Super Mario Brothers, on the Wii. And the, so, you know, the player who's using the gamepad has, you just sort of taps on things and makes the blocks. So I played a couple times as Mario, and, you know, I kind of played with a flying squirrel suit and sort of caught up to speed on how that thing controls and how the levels are put together. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to really have fun. So I took the gamepad, and I was playing with these two other guys, and God bless them. I felt so bad for them because they just happened to be there in the line of fire when I decided to go super ultra asshole troll mode. And
I'm going to ruin this for you.
I pretty much ruined their demo. Yep. It's true. And it reiterates to me that the, you know, that fifth player slot where someone's using the gamepad and they're placing the blocks, that really needs to be better balanced and it needs to have certain restrictions on it. And I still think if you're actually trying to be helpful, it's actually still kind of boring. And it's maybe good for kids, but it's not that engaging. If you've got people who actually know what they're doing and they don't really need the help, then having the player place blocks just isn't all that great. So I think on the one hand, it needs to have more things to do in order to be helpful. And if you decide to play it as a troll, it needs to put more limits on how many blocks you can place within a given amount of time, for instance, so that you can't just spam them in front of people. I mean, there's a limit. You can only have like 4 or 5 on screen at once, and the next one you place, the last one you did will disappear. Mm-hmm. But there's no frequency limit. So you can just tap the screen like crazy, and it will constantly generate blocks. And you can just really fuck people up. I mean, you can make it so that they can't jump because you keep putting blocks over their head. And there's no way for them to get around. I mean, you know, they move to the left and you move to the left. And the poor guy running the demo, he's trying to point out some of the cool features in the level. So every time people would get near this place where there's a secret passageway through a wall where you can go in there and get some coins and power-ups and stuff, he would always kind of point to it and say, hey, check out that wall over there. And of course, I filled up the entrance with blocks so that they couldn't get in there.
So what do we learn? Johnny's a douchebag.
I just wanted to test how evil can you be? And the answer is way too evil to the point where it's really kind of a problem. But I do think that that game is really impressive, and I think it can be a lot of fun with just a few tweaks. And for all I know, they made these tweaks right after E3. I mean, this is an old demo, so... You know, I also really wanted to play DK Crash Course from Nintendo Land because I did not get a chance to do that at E3. And this is the kind of, it seems to be a single player game as far as we know.
Yep.
And you're tilting the gamepad left and right to control this like very rickety, very fragile sort of thing on wheels. It looks like it's like a little, toy, and it's on wheels and it has your Mii's face on it. And it's all like this big physics puzzle. It reminded me a lot of Fluidity in the way that it's kind of this big obstacle course and you're trying to move this thing through there. And it's like on the one hand, you're trying to go really fast because that's how you get a high score. And there are a lot of obstacles that you need a lot of momentum to get over them. So sometimes you have to go fast just to move forward. But the faster you go, the less control you have over the physics. And your little vehicle will build up a lot of momentum, and then if you don't slow it down at the right moment, it'll just slam into a wall and break into pieces. And it was very, very challenging. Like, really surprisingly difficult to get through. And I didn't get that far. The level that they put us in was huge. Really huge. And it just, I don't even know where it ended because it just kept scrolling downward, the more I went. And, the guy demoing it, I asked him, you know, are there going to be other levels? He's like, yeah, definitely more than just this level. So this seems like something you could spend a lot of time on. It might be more frustrating than it is fun right now, but it definitely was really interesting and made me want to like come back to it and learn it better and get a better feel for it so I could, get farther in the level. It was really cool. Really cool. And then I watched someone play quite a bit of the Batman demo. And again, it was the same demo, which I thought was a pretty rough demo at E3. So there's no need to comment on that. I'm sure they've done a lot of polish on it since then, but I just had to laugh at this guy giving the demo because he had no patience whatsoever for the people playing to actually explore and figure out what was going on. Granted, it's a very complicated game, and they throw you into some scenario that's well into the game, so it's not like a tutorial area.
How long had you been doing it, the demo?
I don't know. I think at least a couple of days they'd been in Denver. But this guy doing the demo, it was literally step by step. He was telling the person playing every single button press, every single camera turn, every single step of the puzzle. It was kind of excruciating to watch. And I just thought, like, what does this person playing think of this game? Like, they're not even playing it. They're just being,
they
know,
are
puppeteered.
A conduit for his directions.
Yeah. It was really awful. That's no way. I mean, this was, I felt embarrassed for this person playing. You know, I would have told this guy to shut up. Really, I would have, if I'd been playing. So that was interesting. And then I played the Zombie U multiplayer demo. And this was interesting because a lot of the games were on kiosks that were kind of freestanding. And with that part looked a lot like Nintendo's booth at E3. I mean, there's some music playing. It's a little bit dark, you know, there's some lights, but it's not nothing too obnoxious. But it was made to look kind of like an E3 booth, you know? Mm. And then they also had these sort of rooms that were set off, maybe just so they had better sound, I'm guessing. But they had Zombie U in one of those. And I went over there and they were doing the multiplayer demo, which I did not get to try at E3. I only played the single player. And I was really curious about this because this is the multiplayer that is sort of adapted from what we saw of Killer Freaks from Outer Space last year at E3. So you've got one character playing through this first person shooter, trying to complete certain objectives, like, you know, capture the outpost or whatever. And then you've got the other player who's more like the sort of god character who's looking down at the map and placing enemies and trying to trap the other player.
Which makes a lot less sense with it being zombies instead of aliens.
Absolutely. And I don't know what the conceit is, if they even bothered with one. I didn't hear that part.
Just let it go.
This guy didn't try to explain it. But apparently this guy running the demo, worked for Nintendo. At least that's what he told us in a very bragging fashion, which was kind of hilarious. But
I worked for Nintendo.
Almost in that tone, James. Really. It was great. But this guy was very enthusiastic and he was like telling people all about the Wii U and how awesome it was. And he's like, you know, we don't know when it's coming out, but there's this event on September 13th. And I was like, okay, well, at least he's informed, you know, I mean, being a Nintendo fan, cause a lot of the people working at the event were definitely not Nintendo employees. I think there was just kind of local models or whatever that they'd hired. It was a cool event. You know, we really only got to play for about an hour and a half before they started shutting things down. They did this kind of trivia thing at the end where they gave out some cool prizes. And, you know, for me, it was like, it was kind of okay. It was like barely worth the drive that I had to make to get there. But these were all demos that I'd played months ago. And, you know, I knew there wasn't going to be really anything new there. And as a news guy, you know, doing what I do, I'm always interested in what's the new thing. And I knew there wouldn't be, but it was cool. It was a good chance to get reacquainted with Wii U a couple of months before it comes out. And, for my friends who got to go with me, well, they registered separately, but I met up with them there. It was all their first time, and it was really interesting to me hearing their comments and, you know, and even, my friend Kevin, who's a big gamer, he's been on the show a long time ago, and I talk about him sometimes, but he's like one of the few friends I have who's really into video games. He told me that he enjoyed playing the Wii U demos, but he didn't think he would probably get one at launch because there weren't really any games there that were super appealing to him. It just, that didn't really surprise me. And that's what a lot of people said after E3 was that, you know, like, it looks kind of cool, but like, what's the real strong motivation here? What's the system seller?
Right. It's not New Super Mario Brothers. Ooh.
I don't think it is. I mean, maybe it is, but they'd have to show a lot more of that game. What they've shown so far is very promising, but it's not that fresh. It's not that exciting in the context of all the other damn Mario games that come out. And so I think, you know, although that is probably the most exciting launch game right now, for me, I just don't, it's not really enough for most people. So I think Nintendo's still got some work to do, and we'll find out in a couple of weeks what their plan is to really push this thing out there. But it was very interesting for me to get that perspective from people who, you know, who are definitely interested in this stuff and then actually got to play it, and they still weren't that excited about it. That's scary for Nintendo. That's scary. Yeah.
And to get in, I assume you had to be registered with them for having bought a certain amount of material.
Well, you had to be a Club Nintendo member. So yeah, all the people there were Nintendo fans to some degree.
Yeah, and from what I've been told by someone who asked, like, I don't know if the person he asked was really that informed, but supposedly, like, the more active on Facebook and Twitter Club Nintendo members got invites.
Well, then I'm good.
I see.
I think my 3,500 tweets probably set me up really nicely for...
I think it's just kind of, like, you know, creepy that Nintendo is actually paying attention to this.
Well, see, I'm not even sure how they'd be able to make the connection, though. It's not
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I know that you can tweet or, you know, post on Facebook about the games you just registered, but I don't think most people do that, so...
Hey guys, I mean, you do have to put in your actual name when you register for Club Nintendo. Maybe they just compare their roster.
Yeah, but
roster.
My name is fucking James Jones.
Well, true. True. They just look you up on IMDb and
so James is
got
your
totally the
name.
Wrong idea.
Like, oh, okay. Oh, this must be the NFL athlete, or is it the NBA athlete with the same name? I don't remember. Maybe he's the same person.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. So if you get a chance to go to Wii U Experience, obviously I would recommend it. It was a fun time. It's a cool event. It might be, you know, your first chance to play Wii U. It might be your only chance anytime
ever.
Before, let's say, early November when they finally get demos in stores. So it's definitely cool. Just keep in mind, a lot of the demos there are still really early. And the games, even as of right now today, are probably a lot farther along than what you'll play there. But it's pretty cool. It's nice that they do that. And but it was weird though, like being there and everybody who showed up was like, "How much is this going to cost? When does it come out? What games are we going to have at launch?" And all the people there are like, "We don't know." And I'm thinking, why did you guys schedule this crazy tour through America before you had any details on the system? It's so stupid.
Well, like Johnny, like did they quiz you about how much did you think that it should cost or what?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't try to focus group us or anything like that. It was really, there was no pressure. There was no sales pitch because they have nothing to sell. You know, they can't sell us on it. So, all right. So that's enough for me. James, why don't you talk about what you've been playing?
So I guess I can do that if you so insist.
Please?
Yes. So So last week I spoke quite glowingly about my experience with Rhythm Thief, comparing it very, very strongly to the Layton-style experience. Having now completed the game, I can certify that, yeah, it is a damn lot like the Layton games. It's incredibly fun, charming experience. Whatever. I do think the demo on the eShop doesn't really do the game justice, because it cuts out some of the most charming bits of the game, which is to say its story and presentation style, but be that as it may, it is what it is. It's still a pretty good demo. What I would talk about, though, is the fact that the game is really damn short. So, my clear time on the game. Now, there are three bonus chapters you can unlock that'll probably add, I don't know, an hour. If I had to estimate, was 5 hours and 30-ish minutes. Now, that's a pretty low number, and unlocking the clear chapters is actually somewhat difficult. It's basically wander around and poke things until you find all of the things you need to poke to get them all. So it's not the most exciting experience hunting them down. I've unlocked one of the bonus chapters, but I haven't played it yet. I wanted to unlock them all before I boarded an airplane shortly so I could just get them and be done with it. But in the time being, I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, well, this is going to be an incredibly tedious experience to hunt all these things down. And so far, I think I've been proven out on that.
Well, 5.5 hours seems short, but as a narrative rhythm game, is that
right?
Are there really narrative rhythm games that are longer than that? There, I mean, there aren't that many, period. But like, you look at like Elite Beat Agents is kind of narrative, and you can beat that in less than 2 hours.
No, easily. I think that's true. And the problem is, I'm comparing it to a Layton game because it bears so much in common with one. And the problem is, those games go on for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, it takes a lot less time to generate a text-based puzzle.
Well,
and
exactly.
You can create a lot more of them. And also, those games, I mean, sometimes you on a given puzzle, you might sit there for 5 or 10 minutes and think about it and try some things out. A rhythm game, it's based on songs. The songs last a finite amount of time. So
that's where I was about to go with it. There's more puzzles, and B, puzzles can take a extended period of time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bummer that it's as short as it is. Like, I wasn't the story had completed its arc, obviously. But I would have been okay if for them adding some more content in the middle, even if it didn't really do a whole lot for the story. I mean, because I wasn't feeling, you know, worn out by it yet. I mean, I know I drill through Layton games, but Layton fatigue does sit in somewhere around the point where they reveal the complete asshattery of how the plot ended up working. this game actually doesn't do that. I'm surprised at the lack of asshattery. They basically just wave their hands and goes, "It's magic!" And that's the end of it. Like, they don't even try to explain it as, like, gas out of a box. it still has that. Like, I mean, when I said they copied Layton formulaically, I got to the point where the grand scheme is revealed and went, "Oh my fucking god!" And then he said, "No, it's magic, don't worry about it." And I was like, okay, I'm better off with that than it actually being a robot forest cleaner. It's like, whatever. You know what? Fuck it. That's fine. I'll deal with this. It's a really cool game. It's definitely something, if you're looking for something on the 3DS and you like Layton games, to get. It might hold you over until the next Layton game, Mask of Miracles, comes out, which is, they just announced a release date. It's October.
October?
Yeah, which is really cool.
And Layton 6 was just announced in Japan.
Yep, Layton 6, Layton's Last Adventure. No, this is not the last Layton game. He specifically said, because I was listening, he specifically said this is the last game for Herschel Layton. A lot of websites mistranslated that as being the last game, the last Layton game. There's a difference. Level 5 will make, you know, they'll make a 7. And it seems to me most likely that they're saying, well, this is the last game for Herschel Layton. That would be how they would replace him. Layton's gone to America, and Luke is picking up the story from whatever he's learned. Considering he spent that whole, basically since he was 4, being this guy's apprentice. They could just age him a few years and then whatever, be done with it.
Yeah.
Him and Flora. Or whoever it is, because we keep forgetting her everywhere. so I'm excited for that. Apparently, Layton versus Layton and Phoenix Wright will be playable at TGS, I think.
Oh snap!
Nice.
So that's exciting. So
Danny Bivens is going to be at TGS, by the way.
Awesome, and he's a
huge
fan.
You need to feed him like a list of things to observe and to report on.
Well, Danny is a huge fan, so I don't think we have to worry about that. I think he's got that game covered. But yeah, I mean, that was it's a fun. Back to Rhythm Thief. It's a cool game. I don't know why the hell it took us like 8 years to get this game. But it's really neat. If you can find a copy, which I've talked about in the past, try to. It's pretty cool. I do have one other thing I want to talk about briefly, which isn't a game per se. So I made a decision roughly today about the future of my 3DS. I was going to buy a battery extender so I could actually use this thing on a flight I'm taking, and it not die on me after 2 hours, or I was going to make the upgrade. And Best Buy actually made the decision for me when I walked in, and the power grip from Nyko was on sale for $9. It's normally like 20, and the cheap one that Aaron had, which is the one where you have to remove the old 3DS battery and plug this thing in, and it looks like your DS has gained like a butt. It's $9. So the power grip, which is not to be confused with the power glove, is a shell that sits on your 3DS, kind of like the CirclePad Pro.
Yeah.
That has basically like grip parts at the bottom where your fingers can rest, and it actually is a wraparound battery that uses the little charging port from the cradle to charge your 3DS indirectly. So you charge the battery on this thing, and then that sort of charges the 3DS itself. So instead of getting 2 times the battery life, I get 3 times the battery life, which means I get 6 hours, which might actually be useful.
six hours.
But, you know, I thought about doing the upgrade, but since it was only $9, I felt like I could wait. Like, if it was still 20, then I might have to seriously consider it. But at 9, whatever. Let's do this.
Yeah.
But so far, you know, so far I like it. It takes for goddamn ever to charge, though. It has been going for a while. But I guess that makes sense because it has a lot of capacity to charge.
Yeah.
Hopefully, though, it'll get me through, you know, a handful of hours on an airplane being bored.
I hope it doesn't explode before you get there.
So here's the beauty of it is, though, if it explodes, I can file a police report and get credit back for the games I had.
That's true.
Done. Also,
I can Excel. Done.
Yeah, there we go. Done. Excel. No, and then by the Excel, I get my stuff transferred over, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's it. And I can sue Nyko, so they'll pay for my Excel.
That's right.
And the burn unit.
All those skin grafts.
Have you checked though if Nyko products are, you know, allowed in an airplane?
Oh. They're banned. But if I were running an airline, I would not.
So, James, I mean, remember that when you're on the airplane, you're supposed to turn off the wireless. And when you do that, the battery life is significantly better on
3DS. Are supposed to turn off the wireless because wireless has no effect on airplanes whatsoever. But you're supposed to do that.
Yes, but you're supposed to, and you might as well because you're not really going to use wireless while you're on the plane anyway.
No.
So go ahead and turn that off, and I think you'll find it makes quite a difference. The 3D does as well, but if you're playing 3DS, there's a good chance you might actually want to use the 3D.
I actually want the 3D, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I have a very long flight ahead of me, though, so I mean, I might still have killed it. Weirdly enough, I'm planning to play DS games, so go figure.
What are you going to play?
I'm actually going to finally get around to playing the Lufia 2 DS remake, even though that game makes me feel utter revulsion at what they've done to it.
I look forward to hearing about that. Should be quite interesting.
You know, I get upset that it got... I was like, it got good reviews. Damn it, now I have to play it. Oh, if you're looking for a good story about that game, though, go find, after E3 2010, the comments of Carly and I playing it over at the booth for Natsume, and the absolute fucking disaster their demo was. Because it's amazing.
Natsume's demos are traditionally horrible at E3.
That was the most amazing series of demos I have, because each one was progressively worse than the previous. ending with the Rune Factory, where someone got you lost in the middle of enemies and sold all your weapons. And they had no mechanism for resetting it.
All right, man. So, Guillaume, please bring it home.
All right, I will. So, I am still playing New Super Mario Bros. 2, and I'm, you know, it's not a popular opinion, apparently, but I have coin fever. I am addicted. It is amazing.
Guillaume is all about the gold!
Gold! Sweet gold!
Yeah, like, I still like it. I'm in World 5 only. Like, I'm still not done playing through the single player. But yeah. I have been... playing the coin rush a little bit more, and it is addictive. I've gotten maybe, I don't have that many street passes, just enough to keep me, you know, interested in playing it for a couple of minutes and then put it back down. I have maybe like 5 street passes. And, one of the smart things that it does is that it doesn't tell you right away how many coins your opponent has gotten. So on your first run, like, it's a mystery if you're, you know, ahead or if you're lagging behind. And so it keeps you on your toes. Like, you're trying hard because you're never sure if the person has like 10,000 coins or, you know, just 100. And then when you finish your run, you see how many coins a person has gotten. And if you beat that person, then you get a golden crown that's worth 1,000 coins. You get his total of coins, and you get your own total of coins added to your total. So all of that goes towards the 1 million coins. So yeah, like, it's pretty cool, and I haven't really found anyone yet who takes the game seriously enough for me, though. I've been getting
you
scores of
pissant.
About yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. I've been getting scores.
Like, 5-year-olds just aren't what they used to be.
I've gotten
whoa,
like maybe
John, whoa.
I've gotten maybe like 6 or 7 times the amount of gold that these people are getting. So it looks like people are still just, you know, starting out with a game and, aren't, you know, perhaps they don't know yet that once you reach the flag, if you reach the top, then you double your score. And so like the coins that you get in the first level of 3 can end up being like worth 8 coins once you're done with the coin rush. So, yeah, like they haven't really posed a challenge. And also, the way it works is that you've got these different packs. You've got the mushroom, flower, and star packs. And each pack, is a different set of worlds. So if you choose the mushroom pack, you're gonna get the levels at random that are taken from worlds 1, 2, and the first special world. But also, like, the person has to have finished worlds 1, 2, and the special world. Otherwise, like, if they've only finished world 1, all the levels are going to be taken from world 1. And so, like, 3 out of 5 of my street passes had the exact same set of levels. People just, you know, from the limited selection that they had, they chose to keep the scores from the levels that had obviously more coins than the others. So fatigue kind of set in, you know, like I went and tried doing 3 coin rushes in a row, and I was just like, ah, seriously, these levels again? So immediately after that, I realized that my own score that I'm street passing to other people are taken from the mushroom pack. So I went, finished the flower pack just to give, you know, other poor saps some more variety. And anyway, it's I'm looking forward to getting more, you know, varied levels and, you know, an actual challenge. Come on, people. So that's been a lot of fun. And, you know, like I'm really glad after all that I chose to download the game, because since getting my 3DS and since the eShop has been up, and I've been randomly starting, Super Mario Land 1 and 2 just to play like 1 level or 2 levels, just to have my Mario fix. And now they've probably been permanently replaced by Super Mario Brothers 2. It's an easy game to put down because there's not really, you know, like, people I think online have valid complaints when they say that it kind of feels like a level pack, because there's not really any context as to why you're collecting coins and all of that stuff.
You know, but I was surprised the game doesn't even tell you to try to get 1,000,000.
Nope.
It never actually says that. There's a counter at the bottom, and if you count the number of digits, you can see that it will kind of take you up into the millions.
Mm-hmm.
But it never even tells you that that's a goal. It's just really weird. It's like it puts all the coins out there. But I think – so here's what I think is a misperception about this game, because I've been enjoying it as well. And I feel like the idea that the whole point of the game is to collect a certain number of coins, or even just to collect a lot of coins, is missing the point a little bit. I think it's more that – they want to capture and alchemize the feeling that you get when you get a coin, period. That the game is about the joy of getting coins, not collecting coins. It's not about how many you have. And I think there is too much emphasis in the UI, you know, in the way the game is presented. There is too much emphasis on how many you've actually collected. Whereas a lot of the levels, you might go through the level and you really might only get a couple hundred, which is not even that many for this game.
No.
But it's the way that they spit coins out at you, or it's the way that they kind of put little secrets, and when you find them, it just like showers you with coins.
Yeah, I agree. And that means that it's very easy to pick up in short bursts and complete the level and feel satisfied and put it back down.
Except you can't really save.
Well, there's a quick save. I don't think that's really that big of a that tragic a design flaw. But yeah, like it's very pick up and play, and that's exactly what I bought it for. So I'm very satisfied there. I've also been playing, So maybe 2 episodes ago, I talked about this mod, another Super Mario Brothers Wii, made by fans of Mario games, just designing their own levels. And, so someone, the Darkerai on Twitter, tweeted me this demo for Super Mario Galaxy 2.5.
Yep.
So apparently now I have a reputation of liking these
you're
user
the mod
mods.
Guy.
I guess
you're the expert.
So they actually the team behind making this, I say team kind of collectively, because it's actually being sort of sourced through basically, it's only website presence is there's a forum where they're basically posting job descriptions and basically, I mean, like, we need level designers, we need composers.
Right.
Which is, for me, was actually really shocking. They have actual composers. They're not just recycling old music.
Oh, that's cool.
They just this weekend released a series of video or a video that is essentially a trailer for this demo set, and they released the demo.
Yeah. And the trailer specifically is about looking for people to complete this this mod.
Yes.
They are, like, it ends with, we need people. Like, if you can design levels, if you can compose, if you can this and that, you know, please contact us. So, as perhaps should be expected from such a trailer, the demo feels very much unpolished. It is not as far along as something like another Super Mario Brothers Wii feels. You can get a hint of what they're trying to accomplish, but it's very rough. The level that they made is absolutely huge for, you know, for Galaxy standards. You know, it's, I tried the demo, which was very easy to install. I was surprised. Like, it still uses Revolution, or Revolution, of course, to apply this mod, and you still need the Super Mario Galaxy 2 disc in your drive and everything. But they made an installer for it, so it will copy all the files to the right places. It's very painless and easy.
Nice.
So right away I was ready to go, and the demo appears in the first world on the left of the what would normally be the first galaxy in the game. So instead of going
right, so it's compatible with the rest of the game. So you can actually just play the normal game even when this thing is installed.
Well, I haven't tried, so I'm. But it looks like it. It looks like the other campaigns are available.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. It sounds like it's just they added extra galaxies.
Yeah,
that's cool. Wow. Yeah.
So you start out, and it's this very. You really get a feeling that they're trying to make more sprawling levels, a little bit, you know, like try to give you the feeling of playing Super Mario 64 for the first time. The level is probably bigger than your average Super Mario 64 level was, but you know, like it's definitely not the tight, very linear kind of platforming that Super Mario Galaxy 2 offered.
Really quick, I was going to point out in the trailer they actually have a level that appears to be one of the Super Mario 64 levels.
Oh, so the like a remake?
Yeah, which is funny because there is actually a remake in Galaxy.
Yeah,
Galaxy 2.
Galaxy 2. Yeah,
which
is actually my favorite level, so I was a little bit excited when I saw that.
Yeah.
It was my favorite, except that you can't shoot off the corner of that one wall.
Yeah, well.
Which is fucking bullshit.
It is.
There used to be a star there, and now you can't even blow off the corner? What the hell?
I know. Nintendo is terrible at fan service. So, the level is very big. It's, I think it's called, like, the plains or, like, treasure on the plains. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, it's a plain with a couple of hills. And the first mission was find the red coins. So right away, it's very clear that they need someone to work on the camera. It is not the very controlled, very easy experience that playing Galaxy 2 normally is. The camera can be user-controlled most of the time. Sometimes it will be, you know, swinging around without you saying so. And in certain cases, it can be quite annoying. But also, the main problem, I would say, in that particular mission is that because the camera wasn't controlled, there's not really any hints of where the coins are. So, well, maybe it's not a problem, but I mean, I did, you know, scratch my head a lot, like trying to figure out, okay, where the hell did I not check, you know, as I was looking for the last few coins. As I was picking up red coins, it didn't even say if I had picked up the sixth or seventh or anything. So I was really in the dark. And then once I picked up the eighth coin, there was nothing showing me that I could access the star.
They haven't done the cinematics, basically.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
So it's funny you mentioned that the camera was such a nuisance. What it tells me is that, I mean, I don't think they could rewrite the camera engine for this mod. So what I get from it is that there's a lot of non-dynamic camera panning going on in the original game that Nintendo themselves put in there to control the camera being pointed in the right direction.
Oh, there's a lot of scripted camera.
Yeah, but I think there's even more than I thought there was based on this. It sounds like there is a ton of it, which is actually gives me an even deeper appreciation for what that game entailed, because the camera's really, really good in Galaxy 2.
Yeah,
right.
So if there's that much scripted camera, they spent a ton of time on it.
Yeah. So the red coins mission was fine. I thought like that once I completed it, I thought, okay, I think that this mod should please fans of Super Mario 64 who want a more, you know, open, free experience, than the Galaxy games provided. Then I tried a second mission and it was the same level, but set at night and the boos were all around. And you had to open these chests in the same way that you open chests in Galaxy. You find this Koopa shell that you have to throw at the chest to open them. So you had to find one with a star. The problem was that the Koopa shell was on top of a set of blocks that were, like, the jumps weren't really easy to make. And the camera was especially annoying in that segment because it did a complete 180 around your character. Every time you jump the last gap.
Oh.
Yeah. Like it was at the worst place you could imagine. So that was annoying. And to simulate the night, they had this kind of weird filter that gave the impression that someone was shining like a black light at the whole scene. It gave everything this kind of gray purplish look. And sometimes when the camera was far away enough from Mario, you could see that it didn't go all the way. Like, it was only shining in your general area. And outside of that area, and outside of that radius, everything was, you know, bright and shiny. So it was, you know, kind of distracting. And I don't know, maybe I was just a little bit tired also when I tried it, but the camera that wouldn't cooperate and the kind of lame grayish visuals and the fact that I had to constantly go back and forth, grab the Koopa shell, go to a chest, like I kind of started feeling a little bit sick. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, I don't know. So I just, I stopped playing the demo then. I think only two green stars were left and I didn't really want to do those anyway. So, yeah, like the feeling that I'm getting is that this thing is really not far along and I would not expect
to play.
Yeah,
this sounds like a proof of concept. It really does sound like a kind of, it's a recruiting video demo.
Yeah, right.
It's like, hey, we have an editor. We can make levels in Galaxy 2, but we really need your help to make them good.
Right, we can do this.
Yeah. So, like, given the way that these projects sometimes go, like, perhaps the final product will never come out. I would say it will probably take at least a year to come out, because when you look at newer Super Mario Brothers, their last trailer is from November. And they thought that the release was imminent, you know. So, and they're still not done.
And imminently not happening yet.
Yeah, and the game seems way farther along than the 2.5 is, and they're still not releasing it. So we'll see.
Well, I would say 2.5 though is way more ambitious.
Sure, but that kind
ambitious
of works against
and noble
it.
And very challenging.
But you know, I was just trying to find a contact we could talk to so we could ask questions and see what they wanted, you know. And, you know, I was impressed by the number of people they have listed as staff, but that also can be kind of an ominous sign,
right?
Because that means, are this many people actually working, or are they just sort of like, oh yeah, I can make levels. Level editor. Congratulations, you're now a level editor.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I hope it's more in these people have proven they can do what they say they can do.
Yeah, but also people are doing this for free, supposedly. So, you know, there's probably
a
high turnover. And
oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, well, believe me, I know. Trust me.
What? There's turnover in a volunteer organization.
Yeah, when I'm yelling at people.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, but yeah, like, so the credits might be a little bit padded that way. You know, like some guy worked for, you know, on one level or did one song and then, you know,
right,
just dropped
out. Maybe they'll be like Activision and just take off anybody's name who wasn't there on the last day.
Hey-o.
You know, what I want out of this game is I just want somebody to make, it doesn't have to be that many levels. I just want maybe just a few levels that are just neat and have good ideas and are new. Even if Nintendo sues them. All right, go ahead, sue them. Whatever. I just want Nintendo to see, wow, people really want to do this stuff. Because I think seeing people make new Super Mario Brothers levels would not be nearly as impressive to Nintendo as people making Galaxy levels. I think they would look at that and go, wow, that's ambitious as hell.
Yeah, like if you did something like this and you really pulled it off and did a fantastic job and you got some media coverage and you got a lot of people to try it out, that could turn into like an actual development studio.
Right.
I mean, and the same goes for, you know, the work that these guys are doing on new Super Mario Brothers Wii, because that's not easy work either, but it's certainly less right. impressive. But I mean, there's how many freaking PC developers started from doing yeah. Quake mods and Doom yep. 3 mods and stuff like that? Yep. I mean, and, you know, Half-Life 2 mods. So this could, and, I mean, it's not something that's really happened in the console space. You know, I think the ability to pull this off and to do a really nice job, it proves a lot about your skill as a developer. And these days, a lot of people are saying, you know, if you want to work at my development studio, I don't care what college degree and game design you have. I want to see what you've worked on.
Right.
Even if it's just an amateur project, I want you to actually make something and bring that to the interview. This is perfect. I mean, this is a really impressive piece to show off in your portfolio, whether it was legal or not. Like, these guys don't care.
Like, I would just want Nintendo to see them just so they could think about, you know, people really care about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I don't expect it to make a culture change, but, you know, I would have bought more levels for Galaxy 2. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Of course I
yeah.
would have. I mean, Galaxy 2 is in and of itself a $50
level
pack.
It's already more levels for Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a $50 level pack. It doesn't make any effort to ingratiate itself to the story of its predecessor. Because
no,
it doesn't
but it's
have
a
one.
Hell of a level pack.
It is a tremendous level pack. And if Nintendo put up a service that here is a level editor. Make stuff.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable. I would yep. be beside myself.
Now probably their problem is they don't think they're going to make any money off of that, but I don't think they necessarily should.
Well, I wish these guys the best. I look forward to seeing more. It sounds like it might be a while before we really see the fruits of their labors, but that's very cool. I wish them luck. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of new business, and now we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got your listener mail.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we've got impressions for Rhythm Hunter Harmonite by Don Koopman. This is a rhythm action game, and Don really likes the eShop demo from Game Freaks, the creators of Pokemon. See what Japanese 3DS owners are getting next month, and us probably not long after that.
Cool.
Next up is An Extra Life, Eternal Darkness by Danny Bivens. We talked about playing Eternal Darkness a few years back, but on Retroactive, but Danny has decided to challenge his perceptions of reality in this edition of Extra Life. See if his perception of reality is utterly destroyed.
This can't be happening!
May the rot seat your eyes!
Okay, we have a review of Madden NFL 13 by Andy Gergen. I know on Nintendo World Report it's a crime to say Madden is always the same year in and year out. And this time it's true. It isn't. Madden NFL 13 doesn't have online play. EA. It's less than a roster update. We also have a review of The Last Story by James Dawson. The RPG with a combat system inspired by Western sensibilities is finally here in North America. Despite the overabundance of black leather, James really likes it. Come see why this is a worthwhile addition to Wii's library.
Next, we have a blog. Zach's Gaming Stuff. Uplift by Zach Miller, obviously. Zach owns a lot of stuff. No, really, he owns a lot of stuff. And
yes.
It's jammed into his entertainment center. Or at least it was. Look at the Tao of Zach as he gets his feng shui on as he rearranges all of his gaming stuff.
We have a roundtable, a discussion about the merits or lack thereof of New Super Mario Bros. 2 by the NWR staff. Should NSMB2 exist? Does its existence seem justified? Yes, says Guillaume. So you don't really need to read this. But embrace your inner rhetorical philosopher and go read it anyway.
Wow, yeah, that sounds really existential.
It is a crisis!
Should this game exist? Wow, okay.
Does its existence seem justified?
All right, so yes, be sure to go check all of this stuff out. And hit up the forums, too. Join the forums if you're not in there. They're really good. Head over to NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time for listener mail, and John has the first letter this week.
All right, Shad from Tennessee writes, "It's no surprise that video games are often pegged as a source of violence, but recently I got to thinking, why is it that you only hear video games causing violence? There are so many different types of violent entertainment out there. Football comes immediately to mind, a game in which people tackle each other for a ball. Then there's wrestling and MMA, a quote-unquote sport in which two people beat the crap out of each other until one falls down and one doesn't get back up. And then there are those airsoft guns that people shoot at each other. Guns that look so hyper-realistic that cops have had a hard time IDing them as fake. My point is that these things are all physically violent in the real world, whereas video games are only virtually violent on a screen. So why is it that fake violence causes real violence, and real violence apparently does not?"
Damn.
Damn, so, son.
Well, I mean, I've actually played some games that have led me to violence, but that wasn't because of the content so much as it was. So much as it was because Ubisoft made them.
Yeah.
So I Shad makes a great point, and I think his question is fairly rhetorical because I think he knows the answer. I mean, the reason that video games get blamed for causing violence, even though they do nothing of the sort, is because people don't understand them. And the people who make these claims are always older people who don't actually play video games. They don't understand the effect or lack thereof that they have on your mind and on your behavior. And the reason that these other things are more acceptable is because they've been around longer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, the wrestling, the MMA thing. I mean, if you go back to like the 40s and the 50s, even in the 20th century, boxing was very controversial at one point. It was considered a kind of a violent base sport that, you know, people shouldn't be watching, much less participating in. And over time, it just became so popular and so common that people didn't think about it anymore, you know? And people like to go watch people punch each other, but it didn't make you go out and punch people. You know, that's a false relationship. It just doesn't work
like,
that
it's
way.
It's like saying, if I go out and beat somebody with a bat, well, it must be because, you know, I'm obviously a big, you know, fan of, you know, the Braves. You know, baseball.
Well, actually, to be fair, there are years where if you were a fan of the Braves, you probably did want to go beat someone with the bat, but you know, it was probably Ted Turner you wanted to beat with the bat.
And frankly, I think the idea that you can take the resulting behavior of someone, if someone does something really bad, okay, they commit a crime or they commit some violent act against someone else, the idea that you can take that and trace that back to a single factor earlier in their life is probably rarely correct. It's probably a confluence of multiple things and potentially some kind of chemical imbalance and potentially this person's social life or lack thereof or some kind of unfortunate social interaction. And it could be all of these things. And if you're mentally unstable, or if you're growing up in a kind of psychotic environment where it's hard for you to appreciate what's real and what's not because of the way people treat you or because you do a lot of drugs or because, you know, you're mentally ill, then something like a video game or watching a boxing match on TV or watching a movie can trip you off. But so could anything. Yet, like, blaming a trigger that only affects crazy people makes no sense, because that trigger could be, it's arbitrary.
Anything that kids get exposed to over a long period of time that people see them doing a lot, it's automatically assumed to be bad. You know?
Oh, right? Yeah.
Oh, those,
yeah,
yeah. You put on those rap songs all the time.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
rap music is bad. You know?
Well, I mean, comics had to deal with this really, really just endlessly. I mean, they even
Lenny Bruce, yeah.
Well, I meant comic books, not comedians.
Oh, comic books. Yeah, sure, that too.
Yeah. In fact, the only reason they aren't probably still getting beat about the head is because they aren't quite as prevalent as they used to be. And I mean, they aren't as ubiquitous, might be the better word of saying it.
But
if anything,
they're probably more violent and more graphic than ever. Because
there's all this
sort of bodies of censorship, like the Comics Code Authority, those don't really – it might actually exist, but it doesn't really have any teeth anymore. There are lots of comics that come out, even under major labels like Marvel and DC, that don't go through those processes. No, that's the thing. Like, comics have been around long enough now that no one thinks comic books are evil. So video games will get to that point. But we're kind of just, you know, we're bearing the brunt of, you know, we're video games are still relatively new, and there's still an entire generation that doesn't understand them, and that's basically what it comes down to.
Yep, and there's not just the studies being made. I mean, there's also the fact that the media relating those studies usually don't often understand them fully. Scientific journalism is not really... You would need actual scientists to report sometimes, and you don't always get those. And also, you know, sensationalistic crap sells. You know, scary stories
right.
is what sells. And
right.
right now, people watching TV are, you know, who watches the news on TV anymore? Old people. And so that's, you know, the kind of audience that they're trying to attract, I suppose, in a way. And they're the audience that are going to be scared by these stories about these technologies that they don't fully understand.
You know, the other thing is, I mean, like, you know, I live in Colorado, and we had the shooting at the Dark Knight Rises
yes.
premiere a couple months ago. Mm. And, you know, that guy's on trial right now, and he's clearly psychotic. I mean, just a fucking
nut. I mean, there's endless accounts of him just being – I mean, there was University of Iowa basically said, under no circumstances accept this man. Because they were – I mean, if somebody writes that about you in a university acceptance context, they had the ability to learn that much from you in the relatively brief time you meet someone during admissions.
Exactly. He's not even pretending to be normal. Like, he's not even trying to hide his crazy. It's just everywhere for everyone to see. And the thing is, I mean, when something like that happens, people are so confused because it's something that's just outside of your – understanding of how people behave. You can't imagine why someone would do this. And you get desperate for some kind of rationalization. And you start to look for something that could possibly explain why this person did what they did. And the real answer is there is no explanation. He's fucking crazy.
There is an explanation. He's crazy. Well,
exactly. I mean, that's it. But you can't go beyond that. Nothing made him – I mean, you can't say, well, this made him crazy or he was crazy, but then this thing really pissed him off and sent him off the deep end. I mean, it could have been anything. That's the thing. I mean, the response is someone should have seen this situation this guy is in and did something. And people did try to do something. And whatever about the system or there wasn't enough inertia, you know, they didn't hit a critical mass of enough people being concerned about it or whatever. But – you know, like, I mean, that's the proper way to deal with this is like people recognize this in a person who's clearly troubled and they get involved and they try to make a difference. They try to improve this person and keep them from going too far. But trying to like take away all the stimuli that might possibly piss him off enough to send him on this crazy spree, there's no way. And it certainly doesn't make sense to take it away from all the normal people who are totally capable of handling it and processing it in a healthy way just to make sure it doesn't get in the hands of these people who really don't need an excuse.
Right. Like, there's no common – we can't understand these people at all. There's nothing in common between normal people and those people. This American Life had a good episode about the psychopath test recently, and the whole crew of the show – went through kind of a, you know, a shortened version of the test. And they were all like taking bets on who would score the most points on it and, you know, joking around and they were nervous when the results were coming up. And the psychologist came in and announced that, you know, everyone had gotten zero. People who do these things have...
They are deeply, deeply, deeply disturbed.
Yeah, we can't even start to imagine just how disconnected they are and how... Mm-hmm. abnormal their reactions are.
I have no doubt that if you have trouble processing reality, that spending a lot of time in fantasy can blur those lines even more, and it makes it hard for you to tell what's real and what's not real. But that doesn't have to be video games. That could be anything. That could be books. And if you look back in history, it has been books before. So again, any stimulus is capable of doing this. It doesn't matter how violent it is, and it doesn't matter what form the media takes. But I think for most of us, if we can get back to like actual, you know, the 99.99% of the populace who don't have these problems, thank God. I think for me personally, I read a lot. I experience a lot of fiction because I find that fiction actually helps me process reality better. It helps me define those lines. It actually helps me, it sort of sheds light on the things that I already see in my real life. And because I see these things through the prism of fiction, I now understand what's in the real world better. I think that is the case for everyone. That's why people read fiction, because it teaches you about the real world.
And it also shows you what's not reality.
Or people who are beset with the kind of issues like the individual in Colorado appear to have do sort of devolve into this self-fantasy that, you know, they surround themselves in this image of themselves being greater than those around them. And to an extent, that sort of can be fed by things that are fantasy products. But there's such a small percentage of the people fit this criterion that it makes no sense to do any sort of action to restrict them. But it makes much better sense to devote those efforts to trying to identify these people and get them help.
I feel pretty strongly that I think video games actually are probably less dangerous in this regard and more constructive for the rest of us. Precisely because they are games. I mean, they have rules. Yeah. They have deterministic outcomes. When you do something, another thing happens. These are, I mean, even for children, these are really valuable lessons about the way the world works that you can take into reality and apply in your life. And all of us have. We've done that. We were trained and raised by video games, and we're healthy, functioning, successful people, partially because we played video games. And I think this is something that this is a story that doesn't get told enough. I mean, most of the gamers I know are highly functioning, successful, social adults. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think that's in spite of having grown up playing a shitload of video games. I think we learn valuable things from these. And if we don't tell that story, if we don't get that message out to our friends and our family and to society at large, politicians, business people, whatever, then we let these crazy, you know, alarmist media reports about, you know, sociopaths take over the narrative of what video games are all about. So the next letter is from Cesar in Australia. Thanks for reading out my last letter about Hyrule Historia and what it could mean for future efforts of that type by Nintendo. You can imagine my delight then to hear that Hyrule Historia is now being localized in English, but I digress. My question this week came up as a result of playing through Xenoblade over the past few months. As an adult gamer for whom a multi-hour block in front of the TV each week is a rare opportunity, I was at first intimidated by talk of the game's 70-hour length. Then I started playing the game and found to my surprise that apart from the occasional long cutscene, the game has a number of features that really help me get the most bang for buck out of the limited time I have to play. So my question is, what simple non-game mechanic features like these do you consider to be essential or to greatly enhance your game experience? When they aren't implemented, do you miss them?
Being able to save anywhere.
Save anywhere. James talked about, this was like the first thing James said about Xenoblade that really caught my ear, was talking about how freaking convenient it is to play.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a game driven by its own convenience that it lets you see what they wanted to show you and skip all the pain that usually comes with that. It's not a guided experience, but they very much let you go where you want to go, and they do a very good job making you want to go where they want you to go, if that makes sense. Like, look at this. We're going to take you there, but we're going to let you go yourself, and we're not going to make you deal with all the bullcrap that usually comes with getting there in an RPG.
Yeah, but that's not to say the game's super linear.
No, it's not. It's not. It's just they've cut out all the stuff, and there's stuff they want you to see, and they make sure you can get there without it being painful.
Yeah,
it's not linear. It's just a matter of them saying, "This is look at this over here. Look at that." I mean, it's more of a we have places we want you to go to, and you'll get there for story reasons, but we're not going to make it difficult to do that.
Keeping it in the RPG realm, perhaps some people would think of it as a form of hand-holding, but I really appreciated in Dragon Quest V just being able to press B and one of your party members just reminds you of where you're supposed to go, what your goal is. Because, yeah, you know, these games can be 40, 60, 80 hours long, and stuff happens. You know, you don't always keep playing through, like, unless you're James. Sometimes you can take a break. You can, decide to come back to a game later.
But also, they're full of diversions. They're full of all these side quests and grind quests and, like, all these optional things. And you go do those, and then a lot of games will effectively punish you for going and exploring the game, the content on the side, because then you try to come back to the main game, and you're not really sure where you were when you departed. Maybe at the time you broke off from the main quest and started doing side stuff, maybe you didn't realize you were doing side stuff until much later. You know, sometimes the games aren't that clear about what's the main quest and what's the optional quest. Yeah. By the time you get deep in the optional quest, you kind of want to finish it because you're already halfway through it, but then you're not really sure at where you diverged, right?
Yeah, I would say that Namco's RPGs are especially brutal for this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're like, I don't know where you're supposed to go. You figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? No. And then suddenly you find yourself stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Of course, there's games that do it more elegantly than others. I'm sure that the answer is not always like having a giant fucking arrow pointing you towards where you're supposed to go. But, you know, if you can make it subtle or optional or, you know, there's a lot of developers have found great ways to actually implement this.
I always like being able to talk to NPCs and having, you know, what they say to you change based on what's going on in the story. Like, hey, maybe you should try looking over there. Oh, I see that you have, you know, this artifact. Well, maybe you should take it over here and see what happens. You know, that kind of stuff where it doesn't seem too forced.
Yeah, yeah, and they can even be more subtle than that, but they can drop all kinds of clues. But that stuff takes a lot of effort to put that in, you know.
Yep.
I think the save anywhere thing is very valuable, and I also think this might sound really petty, but a save system that doesn't make you walk through a bunch of menus in order to do something that you're going to have to do every time you turn on the game.
Oh, the how about the yes, I want to load. Yes.
Yeah. Are you sure you want to load? Are you? Yeah. And the default is no. Like, really? I'm going to turn this game on, and if you're going to give me 5 menus to get through before I start playing, I'm going to want to hammer this button. So at least make the default choices on the menu the ones that will push me through the menus and get me to playing the game. Better yet, let me skip the menus and just play the game.
If the question is save, I want to have to confirm when I want to save a game. I want there to be a physical confirmation saying, are you sure you want to overwrite? Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
That's fair. Yep. Another thing, this really drives me crazy, but why is Nintendo the only company left that uses quick saves? Where if you reload it, it deletes your save file?
Soft saves.
And the crazy thing is, Mario 3D Land just saves after every level, period.
Yes.
It just whatever you did in that level, because it's not like you did anything bad, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not like you screwed yourself over by playing this level. So yeah, we'll just go, that is the correct way to do it. Thank you. And then you play New Super Mario Bros. 2, which came out a year later, almost a year later, and it's back to the old like DS style, which is ridiculous, which is you can only save after you beat a fortress or a castle.
That doesn't make any sense.
Or you spend star coins to open up a new pathway. Like, this is a portable game. What the fuck are you thinking? Actually, don't even ask me if I want to save.
Just do it.
Don't even prompt me to save. Don't even make it an option. Just fucking save every time I do anything. Save, damn it. It's portable. Save.
Johnny's getting hot over here.
While we're on the topic of saves, sometimes games will tell you, are you sure you want to quit now? Because you're going to lose what you last saved. And in some cases, they don't tell you when that was.
Right.
I kind of wish that they did. Like, I don't know. Did you save for me? You know, sometimes they've got autosave. And yeah, you've got no freaking idea if anything has saved ever. and you don't find the option because, you know, it's the first time that you load up your game, and perhaps there are save points, perhaps there are not. So something like with the Prini game happened to me. There's save points, but I didn't know, and I just stopped after the tutorial, and then I had to do the tutorial again because, you know.
Oh, yeah. Games have forced you to do the tutorial over and over and over again.
And I bitched about this on Tales of the Abyss. I want to be able to skip the combat. So I want to be able to just say, okay, I was pretty close. Just reload or just let me refight boss battles. Mm-hmm. And some RPGs let you do this. Like, I was right on the edge. Can we just start the boss battle over again? But if I can't do that, I want to be able to skip the talking sequences during the boss fight, like before, because some of the discussions before the bosses in Tales of the Abyss go on forever.
Yeah.
So instead, you're just hammering the A button for it to end. But on the converse of that, I also hate it in RPGs where if you hit A to advance the text too fast, it just skips the whole video. It's like, oh, you didn't want to see that? Okay.
Yeah, there should be some kind of confirmation. Are you sure you want to skip this video? Yes, please.
Another feature would be actually the super guide. I think that was a really elegant way of dealing with the fact that some people have never played a Mario game before. And other people have played a shit ton of Mario games before. So just, you know, make the help optional, make the levels harder, and it's a good way, I think, to keep everyone happy.
You have to use it correctly, because, like, New Super Mario Bros. 2, I don't think they made the levels harder.
No, yeah, and that's really, I agree.
There's some hard challenges, like, to find the star coins, but getting the star coins is already optional. Like, if you know that you can get those, then you know that you're in for a challenge.
Right. Yeah.
I don't protest the super guide being in there because I don't have to use it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to put that in there, that really gives you the carte blanche to make the game more difficult. Yeah. And they've done a good job of that in the past few games, and this one they did not.
Agreed.
You know, there's so many things, I mean, because we could probably do this for years, but... There's just so many things that make so much obvious sense. It doesn't seem like people get that we can probably just sit here and go like, why?
Well, you know, interface design and industrial design and, you know, human interface design are not the forte of game developers in general.
No.
There are exceptions. Some people are very good at it and they do very clever, intuitive things that you really notice, and it really makes the experience more pleasant overall. But in general, a lot of people, and James, you know this, you're a software developer and you work with a lot of software developers, but a lot of people who do programming and things like that are not very interested in usability.
Or they think it's easy and it doesn't matter. So right. They just right. half-ass
yeah.
it.
So James is going to read the final email this week.
This is from Jargon, right?
Hey, Negative World Represent.
There nice. You go. Jargon writes... During your recent discussion of the Wii U launch, Johnny stated that there is nothing that a Wiimote Plus can do that the Wii U gamepad can't, and he said that he hopes that there won't be any games coming for Wii U that require the Wiimote.
I'm not sure that I actually said that, by the way. I don't think I did.
Anyway, I'm returning to the voice of Jargon now. I couldn't disagree more. First, while the gamepad may have a gyroscope and an accelerometer technology included, the form of the controller does not lend itself to the types of motion controls we saw throughout the life of the Wii, such as swordplay or swinging of a golf club. Second, I, for one, hope to see games using exclusively Wii Motion Plus on Wii U, refining and expanding upon the motion controls we got on the Wii. In particular, I would consider it a big disappointment to look back on hitting A to swing my sword in Zelda after playing Skyward Sword, and I found the Wii's FPS controls to be an improvement over dual analog. I know the Wii U gamepad could add some interesting mechanics to Zelda. Would you guys really take that over seeing where the motion control of Skyward Sword can go from here? If a new Metroid Prime were to come, is having the game map more accessible worth losing the pointer controls? I know these games could allow both options, like Pikmin, but in that scenario, I don't think motion controls would realistically be given the attention necessary to flourish. I don't want Nintendo turning its back on all the new and innovative gameplay that came out of Wii. What do you guys think?
Well, I definitely think that the form factor is very important for a lot of games and a lot of the motions. The Wiimote was really probably optimal for so many types of applications. I'm not really into motion controls all that much. I really liked Wii Sports Resort, and that's the biggest motion-heavy game that I liked, but especially for the pointer. I can't imagine trying to point with the gamepad. There's a reason why...
It's built in.
I want to point with the gamepad.
Well, even if it's built in, like, there's a reason why guns don't have two handles for each hand.
Okay, look, most swords are held with both hands, and most guns are held with both hands. So I'm not buying this particular argument of yours.
Wait, no, but like, I don't think you're picturing what I'm there's a reason why they don't have two handles, like one next to each other, like a freaking steering wheel.
He's imagining like a divining rod of a sword.
You know, picture the gamepad and try to like put a gun barrel in the middle, in the back of the gamepad. That's what I'm talking about.
Don't give rogue hardware manufacturers ideas.
No, I agree with you there. I think that, you know, the fact that Wii U can use both means that if you want to play your first-person shooters with pointer controls, in most cases, you will still be able to do that. But it means that those of us who don't like pointer controls, and trust me, there's a lot of people like me who aren't really all that interested in pointer controls and first-person shooters, now we have the choice to play with something different. And we have the choice to play it with a controller that has much more functionality in terms of doing things that the Wii Remote cannot do. I mean, that's the thing, that playing a shooter with pointer controls is, it doesn't let you do anything that you couldn't do before. It just lets you do it in a different ergonomic fashion. And, you know, personal preference. Some people like it better. Some people like it less. But it's really the same experience, just in a slightly different way. It doesn't add functionality to it. And I think playing with the gamepad does. So yes, I want to play the next Metroid Prime on the gamepad. Absolutely. I want to play the new Zelda on the gamepad, because I think Skyward Sword works. It's amazing that it works, but I don't know that playing Skyward Sword with Motion Plus makes it more fun than other Zelda games. I really don't think that it does.
I will say that the only reason I beat Metroid Prime 3, because to keep in mind I didn't beat the other two, is because I like the control scheme a lot better, and it felt more action-y.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't have a lot of experience with shooters on the Wii or wherever else, but Metroid Prime 3, I really enjoy. It's just freaking comfortable, you know, to have both hands kind of being able, like, you don't have to have them next to each other.
I really disagree. But playing shooters with the pointer is very uncomfortable to me.
I think that it works better with kind of a slower paced game than Metroid Prime than it does with actual shooters, like actual first person shooters competitive first person shooters.
Prime 3 is fairly fast. I mean, it's a lot faster than
Prime
1.
Fast is not really
2.
What I was saying. I mean, like, where you have to like react to other people, quickly turn around, stuff like that. Where like you can't always dictate the flow of the game.
Well, but John, I mean, Killzone 3 has that PlayStation Move gun thing that people use, and they really like it.
Yeah, I
wouldn't
want
to play the game that way, but people do, and that's a fast game. It's multiplayer.
Well, I have to justify having bought the Move.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like that's how I feel about it. I feel like it's an alternative. It's a neat alternative, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary. I don't think it's so much better than playing with a typical, you know, gamepad.
We're never going to all agree on this, because it is a matter of personal preference, and the good thing is on Wii U, I think you will have your choice. Now, if the argument is that because you have this choice now, the amazing fertile ground of motion controls is not going to be advanced, I would say, where did you think shooter controls and first person shooters were headed? Did you really think they're going to get a lot better? Because I don't think they are. I think that technology does what it does, and it doesn't really have anywhere to go. I mean,
I think it had, maybe not within the confines of Nintendo, had somewhere to go, but I think within the broader industry, there probably was places for it to go, because a lot of developers didn't really take advantage of it. I mean, I reviewed multiple shooters for the site on Wii, and I always felt like they either half-assed it or they no-assed it. I mean,
I think one of the main drawbacks, like, the Wii first was not really a fertile ground for first-person shooters. So there's really no big-name developer that developed, you know, an actually great first-person shooter for the Wii who could have proven that pointer controls can really do the job. And also,
other than Retro Studios and Treyarch,
I think Retro Studios did a fantastic job. But yeah, and the Wii Remote has perhaps a lack of buttons for everything that these developers want to do. But I don't know. I think I'm not sold on dual analog controls. I'm really not. I think it's a really, really crappy way to control a first person shooter. People usually resort to strafing to adjust their horizontal aiming, because actually aiming with the right control stick is sometimes a little bit too annoying. Unless the game has auto aiming up the wazoo. That's the technical term.
It actually is.
Sometimes like you end up trying to, you know, do these minute adjustments and you push the stick just a little bit and then boom, your view changes way too much. And then like you try to adjust it a little bit back and boom, like you overshoot the other way. And that's a problem, I think, that is common in a lot of shooters. And with a Wii Remote, that's not a problem. I mean, I have way more control.
No, the problem with the Wii Remote, the problem is going around a corner.
Yeah.
The problem is turning around when someone's shooting at you and figuring out what the fuck's going on.
That is true, but isn't that helped a little bit with the Motion Plus?
Not really. You could add a quick flip button if you wanted to, but I mean, That's just coding around the limitation. But I think any hardware interface you have is going to have a limitation.
There are pros and cons to both.
There's no hardware interface that will replicate the feel of actually holding a gun and shooting at things.
Right.
And that's good because of the previous email we've already answered.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with dual analog, I mean, I much prefer dual analog first person shooters, just because, I mean, the problem that you talk about with kind of the, you know, control of the camera, I mean, a lot of that comes from actually just becoming better as a player and learning to control the camera and not suddenly freaking out every time someone comes near you. That's one of the things you actually learn.
John, just say it. Just say F noobs. Just say it. Just say it.
To a degree, yeah, I would say that. It's because it's one of the things you learn is that you actually have to, be calm. Hey, I'm not going all elite gamer here. I'm just saying that's one of the things.
John still gets mad when he sees people playing Mario Kart Wii with the gold steering wheel next to their name.
I'm just saying when I start playing, when I first started playing them, absolutely I was like that, and I'm still like that with a lot of them now.
And now that you're used to a really crappy, terrible way to control games, it's not a problem anymore.
Beyond the evident snark hidden within Guillaume's cheery exterior, I do wonder though if, and John, this is gonna be difficult for you to answer, obviously, but do you think if it had been the other way around, if we had had pointer and motion controls all along, and somebody said, "I will put two joysticks on this," do you think you'd be in a similar situation because you would have adjusted to playing it that way?
I mean, that's,
I know it's rhetorical.
It's completely. Completely rhetorical. It's kind of impossible to answer.
It's definitely, it comes down to your level of familiarity, and you can develop that over time. We've had a couple of emails recently where people are like, are we going to be forced to learn dual analog? It's like, for some games, yeah, and that's not the end of the world. Look, just because you've played a couple of games on dual analog and you had a hard time with it, it doesn't mean you can't learn. You just have to invest the time, and for people who are Nintendo-only gamers, you could have made it through the last couple of generations without ever really having to deal with
the GameCube.
And look, there aren't that many dual analog games on GameCube. There are a few. Luigi's Mansion being one of them, by the way, and Mario Sunshine is one that doesn't get much attention, but that's totally a dual analog game as well, because you have to manage that C-stick a lot. So I think if you can play Luigi's Mansion or Mario Sunshine, you can learn dual analog. It will take a while, there'll be a curve, and it's okay. And look, it's not that you have to, you don't have to normalize, you don't have to become the same as everyone else, but it is a standard. It is one of the primary standard ways to control video games, and it behooves you to get some level of comfort with it. And I think playing things with pointer controls is equally a valid goal that everyone should learn how to do. And I know how to do it. I've played entire games with pointer control. I can do it. I don't prefer it, but I also, that part of that is because I'm not really using a controller when I play a game with pointer control. I'm playing it with this pointer thing. I'm not really focused on the buttons and moving things with my thumbs, which is how I've been playing video games since I was 5 years old. So it is radically different, and it's not surprising that I'm not as comfortable with it. And I could become that over time if I choose to, if the games come out that really force me to. But I don't think this is a, a competition between paradigms of control, and Wii U is like the proving ground where these two are going to come and fight. I think that's really unnecessary. I think this is a great chance for everybody to learn how to play games in a way that they're not super comfortable with yet.
I really don't think it's just a matter of not being comfortable with it, though. I think there's really, in a way, like, people who do prefer pointer controls feel like, oh no, I'm going to have to settle for a less intuitive way. Like, it's just, I mean, your answer is basically, well, get used to it. Like, it's worse, but, you know, it is what it is.
No, I don't think you have to get used to it. If you don't want to use it, then you don't have to. But you're not going to play Assassin's Creed 3 with pointer controls. They're not going to build that into the game, and also it doesn't need it. You're going to have to play that with dual analog, because that's how Assassin's Creed is played. So if you want to play Assassin's Creed on Wii U, you're going to have to learn that. And if you don't want to learn it, then play whatever. Play Nintendo Land. You don't need it.
Play fucking Mario games, you baby.
No, play a game that uses pointer control, if that's what you want. But dual analog controls are a standard of the industry, and yes, you will learn to play with them. I'm not saying you have to. I'm saying you will. I'm not saying you have to. I'm not saying take your medicine. I'm saying, look, in five years, we will not be having this conversation, because everyone who's complaining about it will have learned to use it.
Sometimes I sit down with my PlayStation 3 and I try demos, and you see, like, not one page, but two pages showing you the controls. And the second page is showing you the modifiers and what they do. Like, you have to hold this trigger, and then all the buttons do a second function.
But you don't necessarily get away from that on Wii, though. You don't. Nah. It's just mapped differently.
No, I don't think that's a function of dual analog. That's a function of a developer being too freaking up their own ass to realize that their convoluted control scheme is just that.
But I mean, even something like Monster Hunter Tri, it's like the controls for that are crazy. It's like, you know, you're not going to get away from that.
But you play that with dual analog, though. You play that with the Classic Controller Pro.
You can play it with the pointer.
You can play with a pointer if you want.
Oh, how messed up is that control scheme?
Yeah.
I know some people who prefer it.
Well, we didn't even talk about sword player swinging a golf club.
Can I talk about swinging a golf club real quick? I have only ever found Wii Sports Golf to be the only satisfying experience of swinging a golf club. Yeah, I know the Tiger Woods games are supposed to be good, but they're not. Are they functionally that different from their predecessor in that regard? I mean, are they functionally that different than Wii Golf?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, swinging a golf club is not something that there is a great, great dearth of game or great quantity of games for. There's like one a year, and EA makes it.
Yeah, and how many swordplay games are there that use motion control on Wii? Like two? I think there's more to be done in these areas, but I don't know that these are the future of gaming. I really don't think they are.
And that part of the letter I actually do resonate with, because they discuss that, like, you know, I made the joke about swords, but before that, it was all the way back to Dragon Quest, Tower of whatever.
Yeah, and Dragon Blade. That's another one.
Yeah, Dragon Blade, and then at the very other end, Zelda, and like that's the list. And Wii Sports Resort. There's cool stuff that happened at the end that it would be nice to see somebody build on and make a cooler game. But you know, it is what it is.
I think Nintendo very smartly looked at software development for Wii and said, if we make another system that only has motion control, it's not going to have any games. Developers don't want to make games for this interface. They don't. I mean, certainly not if they're forced into it. They might put some things, they might take advantage of it if it's there, but they don't want to be forced into doing that. And we have to provide a controller that everybody has that has joysticks and buttons. God forbid. I don't understand the alarmism. I really don't.
Well, to be fair, these are Nintendo fans, and we are known for alarmism.
That's true.
I mean, it just comes with the territory. There is alarmism behind every single event.
All right, so that's going to have to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. They were really good letters this week. The address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we would love to hear from you. Finally, as we wrap up the show, I wanted to get to announcing the new Retroactive. We just recorded one last week. You heard it was Wario Land 4, and we wanted to jump right into the next one. Of course, it'll be a few weeks yet before we actually talk about it on the show, We want to get the poll up and running, and we thought with it being the 20th anniversary of Kirby, maybe that should be a theme. There are lots of Kirby games out there for you to get. A lot of them are very easy to get. There's an anniversary collection coming up, and some of these are going to be on that. So if you pick that up, then you'll have access to this. But these are on Virtual Console. They're really not that hard to find. Some of them are on like multiple systems even. So your choices in the poll are going to be Kirby's Adventure. That's the original NES game, but it's also on Wii Virtual Console. It's on 3DS as the 3D version, and it's all over the place. Kirby's Dream Land 3, that's the Super Nintendo game that not as many people played.
No.
But it has apparently really interesting co-op mode, and that's on Wii Virtual Console, so you can definitely get that. That's one I've never played before.
It's slower paced and more puzzle-oriented than your typical Kirby game. Different.
Okay. So there's Kirby 64. That's the only Kirby game that was made for N64. And it has the unique ability to mix abilities together and create new ones. So it has a lot of variety in the powers that you have, for sure. And it's a very rare case of a 2D platformer for the N64. It's on Wii Virtual Console. We've got Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. This is the GBA game actually made by Flagship, who made Minish Cap on GBA as well. And it's a very unusual kind of open world sort of structure. You can sort of go in any direction and you have to find powers to unlock certain areas. It's a little bit more exploration based. It has four player support, which you can't use as an ambassador game if that's how you choose to play the game. But you do always have four Kirby's sort of going around all the time, just like in Four Swords Adventures. It's a really interesting game. A lot of people already have that one. And then Kirby's Dream Course. This is sort of the black sheep here. This is not a platformer. It's a kind of a mini golf game, but with a lot of very strange Kirby twists to it.
It's a really weird game.
And yeah, hard as balls.
It's so hard.
So it's a Super Nintendo game. It's mini golf, except you have all these copy abilities of Kirby, so you can fly and you can like attack enemies and do all this really strange stuff. It's a very, very interesting game, and a lot of people really love it. So that's also on Wii Virtual Console. All these games are available digitally, as well as on physical copies, and so I hope we'll have a lot of participation here. We normally just do three games for the retroactive polls, but in this case, I figured, hey, let's do five. It'll be interesting. So go to the show notes for this episode. We'll have a link to the forums where you can vote in the poll. And we'll run that for a couple of weeks, and then whatever wins, we will play it and talk about it on a future episode of the show. So I hope you'll participate and give Kirby some love here on RFN. And finally, before we go, I just got special alert from James Charlton of the Famicast. You know, we just had a new episode of Famicast go up. Hopefully you listen to that. And he wanted to let everybody know that there will actually be a special interstitial episode of Famicast coming up to talk about the Nintendo Direct in Japan and a few other really interesting things that are going on in Japan right now. The Metal Gear Solid anniversary and maybe some other stuff. So look forward to that very soon. It'll probably be a shorter episode, but you won't have to wait as long. It'll be really cool. So that's all, folks. Thanks for listening, and come back next week where we'll have a lot more to say about Nintendo.
Bye.
Bye. Later.
Peace. Boy, that got heated. Whoa.
Good times.